This is episode number 751 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today on What's New, we're going to talk about Connecticut Gamer Con, Doctor Strange, and some upcoming events for Matthew. Our comics this week will be Gotham Academy, Second Semester Number 2, Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes Number 1, and Clone Conspiracy Number 1. Our Out of the Long Box this week will be Tarzan of the Apes Number 207.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. I really think we should start talking about politics and religion right about now, because I don't think the world has had enough of it.
You will not hear any of that on this show.
Absolutely not. People, smile. This is comic books.
What I will tell you is that there is a new convention coming in April of 2017, Matthew, and it's one that I'm very excited about because it covers something that's near and dear to my heart. From our good buddy Mitch Halleck, who brings us Terrificon every year at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut Gamer Con is coming on the 1st and 2nd of April 2017. This con is going to cover tabletop gaming.
Mm-hmm.
It will cover collectible card games. It will cover video games, of course, and retro games, video games including retro games. And Mitch right now is putting together a guest list, a list of programming. I'm very excited about what is already happening with this show. It's the first gaming convention that's coming to Mohegan, and it is sort of an offshoot of Terrificon at this point. And I really feel like this is a great opportunity, not just for Mitch and for Big Fedora, but because we have PAX East now on the East Coast, and that is like the New York Comic Con of gaming conventions. It sells out immediately when it first comes out. It's hard to get tickets for. I feel like there's room for another show to come out here. And having been to the venue at Mohegan, yep, where we go to Terrificon, I'm very excited about what that could turn into for a gaming convention. So you will hear much more about that in the coming months. But that is happening April 1st and 2nd, 2017. And I will be there with bells on.
And I'll be there as well. And you have been really instrumental in helping shape a lot of this show. And I'll just put it right out there, because I was with some people a couple weeks ago, and they were talking, thinking I was you, talking about all the awesome things that you've sent and all the great things that you're talking about. And yeah, that's not me. I'm not the gamer guy. So
that's all right. We're like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. People get us confused every once in a while, and that's okay.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
I am very much looking forward to this, because Mitch was asking about when we were at TempleCon 1 year and they had,
yes,
the free play old classic arcade games. And I said, Mitch, I will find out who that person is. And we were with our friend John Cimino, who kept saying, you gotta call Funspot. Maybe they can come down. But Funspot's probably 3 hours from Mohegan.
Uh-huh.
This place is out of Rhode Island somewhere. So I've got to find them, because if you've got free play Dig Dug, free play Pac-Man,
right,
free play Battle Zone, I'm there.
Yeah, I think having a room or an area where you have stand-up arcade machines is always going to be a draw for even non-gamers, because all of us who grew up in the era of arcades, there is something that pulls us to that, even if those people don't play games anymore, period.
Yeah.
Like you yourself, I would say, is probably a lapsed gamer.
Yes.
Growing up, as all of us were, I'm sure you were in the arcades playing
arcade
games.
Oh, all the time.
But didn't necessarily translate to being a home console gamer,
yep,
you know, that much now. But yeah, so there needs to be a little something for everybody there. So we'll talk more about that as time goes on. Another thing I wanted to talk about really quickly in the news is that I got the box office numbers for Doctor Strange, which I have not seen yet.
I did not see it. It came, I mean, last weekend it opened with...
We should maybe try to get out to see that together, I'm thinking.
I think we should try maybe Friday or Saturday. Hacksaw Ridge, the war movie.
I heard that was good.
And I need to go see that one. So I planned on Friday going. And the fun part about working my schedule is I have Thursday and Friday all by myself.
Uh-huh.
So I can take in any movie I want to go see.
There you go.
And
at
I love
matinee prices.
Love to go to the movies by myself. So I'm really looking forward to that. Everybody that I have spoken to about Doctor Strange has said nothing but good.
Well, over on comicbook.com, Matthew, they said Marvel Studios has another bona fide hit franchise on its hands with Doctor Strange, and the measure of just how much of a hit it is continues to be tallied. Last we checked in, Doctor Strange had a successful $85 million opening weekend. That's domestic box office. And now it's officially crossed the $100 million mark and shows no signs of slowing down, headed into the next weekend slot. Deadline reports that Doctor Strange is projected to earn $40 to $42 million in its second weekend. That's a drop-off of about 52% from the first weekend, which is pretty respectable by industry standards. It's also a good indicator that Strange has good word of mouth carrying it, which could help it have a profitable final stretch in theaters before the big holiday season movies arrive to occupy the box office. Doctor Strange is in theaters now. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 comes out May 5th. Which I did not realize. I thought that was a late summer.
Wow, yeah.
Release. Spider-Man Homecoming July 7th, which is my birthday, and I am
beyond excited
about that. Thor Ragnarok is November. I thought Thor was in the May slot for some reason. Black Panther is next February. Avengers Infinity War is May of that year. And Ant-Man and the Wasp is July of that year. And then Captain Marvel in 2019. So there's your slate of Marvel movies. I don't think that Doctor Strange is going to be a humongous blockbuster hit. I think it had a strong opening weekend. I think it will do all right at the box office. I think it will be profitable. I don't think it's going to come close to some of the bigger Marvel tentpole movies because I just think the whole magic angle is something that not everybody is in for. I've also heard that it's definitely a film that follows the Marvel formula in terms of what you can expect from the first movie of a particular character, which I think some people are starting to get fatigued from. So we'll see how it does in the long term. I will definitely see it. I'm a big fan of magic, obviously, being a D&D kid and stuff like that. So I'm excited to see what they do with it. I heard it's also doing well internationally, which makes sense because Benedict Cumberbatch is a very internationally known actor, and I think that's going to be fine. So I would love to hear from people who listen to the show if you saw Doctor Strange, what you thought of it. And if you're planning on seeing it, if you haven't seen it yet.
It's really interesting because being somebody that watches a lot of BBC television, and I got into Sherlock simply because of the Doctor Who connection, it is so interesting how Benedict Cumberbatch literally to me came – I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but he almost came out of nowhere. Like he was just an actor that people were liking. Sherlock exploded. I think the first thing I ever really saw him in was Star Trek.
I was just going to say, he played Khan, right?
Yeah, he played Khan, and I just watched it again on TV a couple days ago, and he was brilliant in it, and that made me a fan of his. But this is a guy that's got worldwide appeal everywhere. I don't think there's a woman I know that doesn't love him to death. My wife is a huge fan. I worked with a girl that basically has a shrine to him in her house. So this is somebody that can make people go see a movie that they might not normally go see. And I think Marvel was really smart in doing that. Like they don't normally go out and get a big name actor. He's probably one of the bigger actors that they've gotten to put in a role. And I think it's really selling it. Like, you know, Phil Rudd for Ant-Man. You needed him. You needed that.
Paul Rudd.
Phil Rudd, AC/DC. I always do that.
Although now I have a picture of Phil Rudd donning the Ant-Man costume. And I think I would pay to see that movie.
I think that would be pretty good considering all the trouble he's gotten into over the last bunch of years. But I think that was smart of them to do that because that will really help the international market.
It would be called Ant on the Wall.
Yes.
There you go. It took me a second, but I'm back.
I like it. That's pretty good.
Yeah, there you go.
Back in Ant.
Yeah, so we'll see what the final tally of Doctor Strange is. I mean, who knows? It could be a surprise like Suicide Squad was where it just kept going and going and going like Deadpool was. Does this movie have the staying power like that? I don't know. Yep. I suspect we'll be talking more about it after we see it. We had our 750th episode a little while back, Matthew, and we got a little bit of feedback on that. Daryl Taylor said, I am ready for the Star Wars books to move on to a new time because I think you reviewed the last Darth Vader one.
Yes.
The last time that we spoke. You said, right now my interest in all the Star Wars is waning because every arc goes back to the status quo. So he's looking for new territory to be charted with Star Wars.
Yep. And I agree. I think that the era that we're missing the most of is where we're going to be getting Rogue One. That is that piece that everybody wants. Like you know, literally the movie will end or the book will end with Princess Leia putting the plans on R2-D2.
But I think what he's saying is even that is still going back to a particular time that we've already sort of seen. And I think, and I don't want to speak for him, but it sounds like he's talking about, let's chart some new territory. Now, since Legacy ended, is there anything set in the Legacy era of Star Wars like that?
It's all basically right after Star Wars.
Right. So it's all kind of going back and revisiting over and over again. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see them go in a different direction. I suspect they will. But if you are Disney and you're looking at the Star Wars timeline and the Star Wars franchise, like filling in these early movies around time periods that people are familiar with to bring old and new fans, you know, sort of back to it kind of makes sense. But yeah, I think eventually you want to see them branch out, much like to go back to Marvel. Eventually you want to see Marvel branch out. Like, we don't want to keep following the same formula over and over and over again. We want them to go in a different direction. So eventually you have to sort of chart new territory, but it's always safer to play on people's nostalgia, you know?
Yeah. And I think what Darrow might have been talking about and referring to is, because I had this issue as well, and he and I are very like-minded when it comes to a lot of our hobbies, is that it started with the Emperor being mad at Darth Vader and basically banishing him in issue one. Then by the time we got to issue 25, you know what? Not mad at you anymore, dude. Not mad at you. And nothing changed. Nothing really changed.
Right, because you have these bookends of the time period that you already know the events of.
Yep.
So you can only go – it's like Rogue One.
Yes.
Like Rogue One can't end with, actually, they never got the plan. So they got killed and the Death Star fired.
Those Bothan spies never made it.
The Death Star went on to destroy thousands of planets. And that's the end of the Star Wars timeline. Like it has to end in a particular way.
Yeah. I remember when Dark Horse did the Infinities series where they took certain situations. I might have to go back and reread those.
It was like a what if?
It was a what if.
That's pretty cool.
What if Luke died on Hoth? Huh. How would all of that have changed?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, very good stuff.
I would definitely read some of that. Donnie Salvo said, to Daryl's point, he said, you mean for them to start new adventures like between Empire and Jedi? And I don't know if we've seen that, have we?
We did in the Marvel comics. That was what Marvel did right after that.
Our buddy Ian said, so of course my local comic shop didn't have the greatest crossover event comic in print history. Well, at least I can hear about it through the filter of solid gold ear candy. Oh, well. He said, and of course, he's talking about Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York.
Yes.
Or vice versa. He said, oh, well, and seriously, Matt Herring, what the hell have you been doing with your life? He said, Brian is correct. Big Trouble in Little China is the greatest cinematic achievement in the history of everything. This is not an exaggeration either, just fact. Recognize and rectify, dog. He says, as for the New York Comic Con not focusing on comics, he said, I don't know. Who cares? Let it be what it is. Aren't there lots of other smaller cons that mostly cover comics? I've never been to a con, but when I go to my first one, it won't be San Diego or New York. It'll be Stumptown or maybe up in your neck of the woods, Terrificon or Kineticon. Let them have it be everything to everyone. Everyone loves eating their cake.
We're inviting you to Terrificon.
Absolutely.
Put the invite right out there right now.
It's only going to get bigger every year.
Yeah.
And it's in a place that is made for them to accommodate as many people as want to come to the show.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about awesome. If you look at that room and you look at that area, like where we were last year, we were out in the foyer before you went into the main hall. We had tons of traffic. And there's plenty of spaces to keep growing and growing if you need to.
And if that got filled up, you always have the arena.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's definitely places to go there. What else do we have? Oh, our buddy David Anderson wanted to know if we saw the trailer for the new XXX movie.
No.
You didn't see the new Vin Diesel sequel?
No, not a big Vin Diesel guy, but...
It is the most ridiculous trailer you've ever seen in your entire life. First of all, not to mention that the fact that the X Games era is over.
Yes.
Not according to Vin Diesel. It is back with a vengeance. The trailer is so ridiculous and so cheesetastic. I don't know if I want to see this movie just to see what a traffic accident it actually is, or if I will never watch it in my entire life. And I think I saw the original XXX movie a long time ago.
Yeah.
But there was a 2, and I never saw a 2, I believe.
That was Electric Boogaloo.
He said, this is not a fake trailer. He says, not the sequel you were asking for. Believe that there's people who thought that the Fast and the Furious movies were too grounded in reality. And so they had to make this movie. He says, there needs to be ridiculous fun. James Bond guy shoots darts out of his watch. He said they're caught by an ex-gamer. Good thing I have months to prepare myself. So if you haven't seen the trailer for the new Triple X movie, you should go and check that out. And if you're a fan, please tell us why we should care about this franchise.
Yeah, I've never seen either of the two. I've never seen a Fast and the Furious. And then I know there's another. What's the other car one that they have?
Fast and the Furious, the crew. Not the crew. Fast and the Furious. What's the other car one?
Yeah, there's that other one that I think they're on like four or five right now.
No. Is you're it? Thinking of Fast and Furious.
How? No, there's another. I thought there was another one that was kind of catching up.
A car series?
Yeah, I thought there was.
They did one Need for Speed movie.
Might have been. Is there a Need for Speed 2 coming out then? Or was there a 2?
Well, keep in mind that's based on a video game series. So there has been several Need for Speeds that have come out in the video game world, but they did a movie, and the movie starred the kid who was Walter's sidekick in Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Aaron something.
Yes. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. I think that's what I'm thinking. I must have assumed there was a bunch of those.
Not yet, I'm just thinking the video not game. Ever. So there you go. So that's just a little bit of news. But before we jump into our beard talk, do you not have book events coming up, Matthew?
Yes, I do. I have two of them that I'd like to announce right here. December 3rd, I will be at the book club in Broadbrook, Connecticut, a couple weeks before Christmas. So why don't you come on out and hang out. We'll talk Doctor Who. You can get a preview of my new book I'm working on and all sorts of other fun stuff. And on December 10th at the Pandorica Restaurant in Beacon, New York. It's a Doctor Who-themed restaurant. Please go to my Facebook page. I've got a bunch of stuff up there for that one. I'm going to be doing a hour-long talk, and then we're going to hang out and have a meal.
That sounds like a wonderful evening.
And the Doctor Who restaurant...
It's like a giant dinner date with Matthew.
It is, and a bunch of other people.
Well, there you
go.
And
the cool thing is, if you've never been there, and if you think about theme restaurants, usually you go there and it's like, oh, look at all the theme stuff. This is really cool. And the food is terrible. I've mentioned this before at the Pandorica, the restaurant. The food is amazing. Everybody's great there. So December 10th, I believe it's at 6 p.m. Please come on out and RSVP if you could.
All righty. So this is the part where we usually talk about our beard products in Viking oils, Matthew. And I'll just say, as you said when I got out of the car today and walked up to your house... What did you say? I was looking...
You looked like a survivalist.
I looked like a survivalist, which no one who knows me would ever accuse me of being a survivalist, because I'm pretty sure if you are a survivalist, you have to A, like the outdoors, yeah. B, not be so annoyed by mosquitoes that you prefer never to go anywhere without a layer of off on, and just have the general ability to exist in a wooded area for more than a half hour.
Yeah. You like your camping, but more a video game of camping.
I like camping in theory.
Yes.
But I don't like camping in reality.
Yeah. It was great because you showed up in your khakis, your gray sweater, and you had your knit cap, your Chargers knit cap, and this full lush beard.
Yes.
Kind of freaked me out.
Well, it's the Viking oils that keeps it lush, Matthew.
Yep.
Because as we've talked about before, the skin tends to get very dry under my beard. But having the Viking oils, I've rehabbed it because there was a little while where I ran out over the summer. And we went somewhere... And I didn't bring
it. You went to Disney.
That's what we did. We went to Disney. So that was June. Came back from Disney and it was not in good shape. And then I've been able to rehab it over the past couple of months. And it's looking great at this point.
And it looks great. And I shaved a couple of weeks ago because I was just getting kind of tired of it. Apparently, I shave every Halloween because I realized that I walk in anywhere November 1st and people go, it's no shave November. You're not supposed to shave.
Right.
So I am not for any bad things to happen to men. I just happen to get tired of it.
Literally, I start shaving. Yes. That's when I start shaving again.
So I shaved and I'm letting it go again. But VikingOilsLLC.com, especially with Christmas coming up, Gary's got some great promotions, some great products out there. If you're a lady and you got a man with a beard, get some stuff for that guy. And guys, get some stuff for you to help that lady enjoy your beard a little bit more.
There you go.
Yes.
Alrighty. So let's start out with Gotham Academy second semester today, Matthew. If you remember correctly, about a month ago, I reviewed issue number one of Gotham Academy second semester. And I was very excited for this book because I really enjoyed the first quote unquote season, the first semester of this. And I was a little disappointed with the first issue of this second run because it kind of felt like a filler issue. So I was hoping things were going to get started properly in issue number two, and they do. This is scripted by Brendan Fletcher. Brendan Fletcher, Becky Cloonan, and Carl Kershaw are the storytellers here. Adam Archer does the pencils. Sandra Hope does the inks. Let's see who else we have. Serge Lapointe does the colors. Misasik, I think, does the background painting here. And you have Rebecca Taylor as the editor. So it starts off with a morning during the winter semester where you have Maps bursting into Olive's room and saying, it's second semester, and she's freaking out. So this is the beginning that I was looking for, until she realizes that she forgot that Olive has a new roommate. The one person we met during this first issue the last time around was this girl, Amy, who came to the school and was there with Olive when no one else was back to school yet. And she kind of got her into doing some bad things, throwing rocks through windows, just kind of getting into trouble, that kind of stuff. Well, she has taken over Map's spot in Olive's room and kind of kicked Olive out. And so Olive has a different, or Maps has a different room, and she's not too happy about it. And she's not too happy about the fact that Olive has been spending more and more time with this Amy. Because as you know, Maps is the one who has organized their little group of friends as the detective club. They're at that school where there are many mysteries, and they like to find those mysteries and they like to solve those mysteries. And Maps is a little worried that this new friendship is going to infringe upon what's happening with their group. And she is correct in doing that. The storyline that we get in this one here is that there have been some strange symbols that have been found around the school. And you have a kid whose name is Eric, and he's been researching them, and he's a very high-strung kid, and he's a kid who, every time someone asks him what he's doing, he kind of freaks out a little bit. He reminds me so much of a cartoon character that I cannot for the life of me remember. I will remember who it is, but it's driving me crazy because he has, like, these nervous mannerisms where, you know, Maps will walk by and say, hey, Eric, oh, geez, hi. And he's, like, completely freaking out all the time, and it's killing me.
I know you're talking about too. It's like that could be like five or six different characters.
And I can't even remember what cartoon it's from. Like, my first thought was that it was from an anime, but I don't think that it is. And it's driving me crazy, but I'll figure it out. Anyways, he's been researching these symbols, as we saw in the first issue. Pommeline has an actual necklace that has this strange symbol on it. And she apparently has knowledge about what these symbols are, but is not sharing it with anyone. And you have some kids around campus who, as the semester begins here, are starting to disappear. We open with a young woman who goes and finds a note on her door, and she's kind of wandering around looking for this place that she's supposed to go. And someone comes up behind her and says, I'll show you the way. And then you don't see her anymore. You have Kyle, who is Maps's brother, who's about to give a tennis lesson to another kid. And he waits for the kid to come out of the locker room, and the kid never comes out. Because the kid was also met by this person who says, oh, I'll show you the way. So there's someone who is going up to these kids when no one else is around and is sort of leading them away to something. And we don't know what that thing is. So one day Maps is out putting posters around for Detective Club because she's trying to attract a couple new members. And she sees a poster for Witch Club. It says, learn the school spirit, join the Witch Club. And all of a sudden she turns around and there's like six kids that are wearing witch's hats, and they all seem to be kind of in a daze, and they're saying to her, why don't you come with us? And she's trying to talk to them and they're not really responding to her at all. She's kind of freaking out. And so she decides that she's going to chase after them and figure out what's going on. And it turns out that this witch club is actually, there's an actual person who is behind it, and she's sort of kidnapping and brainwashing these kids to steal precious books from the school. And so as Maps decides to take on this mystery by herself, she ends up finding an old cabin in the woods. And when she gets in there, she sees that whoever is behind this whole plan is there with all the kids. And they end up capturing Maps and they end up brainwashing Maps. And now back at the college, or back at the academy, you have the rest of the group who realizes that Maps is missing and are putting a plan together to find her. And we see that she's already been brainwashed, and that's the way this particular issue ends. So this was the story that I was looking for in the first issue of Gotham Academy second semester. And so I'd love to know if that first issue was kind of, there was a scheduling issue or something and they had to fill in with that, because this is really where the story of the second semester begins. And we're back on track with one of my favorite books in the DC universe. It's a little bit Scooby-Doo, a little bit Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and there's a great sense of humor and sense of mystery to it. But there's also a real dark side, because we still don't really know what Olive's deal is. She's got these fire-based powers. Her mom was a woman named Calamity. That was her sort of supervillain name. And we're starting to unravel a little bit the pieces to that particular, like, personal mystery of hers. So if you like Scooby-Doo and you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and you like that sort of story set in the Gotham universe, definitely worth picking up.
Really cool. So my book that I'm going to be talking about tonight is it's a team up from Dark Horse and Boom Studios. So okay. You're getting a couple really good ones. It is Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes. And when I didn't even know anything about this book, and I was at New York Comic Con, I just happened to walk by the Dark Horse booth, saw it there, and ran right in and bought two copies, one for me and one for our good friend Vin Ferrante, who is a huge Planet of the Apes fan. So I'm looking at it, and before I even got to the table, because they were in a bag, in my head I'm thinking, all right, this is how it could possibly work. This is how they could work it. And I really am getting all crazy and excited. And normally when I'm at a show, I don't read anything that I get. I save that for later. This was a book that I actually started reading while I was at the booth because I was so excited about it. Written by Tim Seeley and David Walker. So you got a couple of great writers right there. Fernando Deguino is the artist. Sandra Molina is the colorist. Nick Picos and Blambot are the letterist. And Duncan Frago did the cover. Amazing cover, by the way. And this is a book that when you see the two marquee names in it, you start to realize that this is going to – you're almost setting yourself up because it can't possibly live up to a awesome Tarzan, awesome Planet of the Apes. First issue in, I'm like, I need more. This is great. So we start out with General Ursus, and that's the dude with the helmet. And he's got his soldiers, and they're walking through the jungle. And they're saying – and one gorilla goes, General, we found the beasts. And he goes, they steal our crops. They hide like dark vermin. Come on out, and you see them all living in this like sort of a hole, but with stairs. And all of a sudden, one of the gorillas says, you know what, let's just start shooting them. So as they're getting ready to shoot them, all of a sudden, somebody comes jumping out of the tree, and you see that it is Tarzan. And as Tarzan comes out, he grabs one of the gorillas, whips him over the air, and you see that this is North America 2016. Now, we flash back to Africa, 1901. So in 1901, you've got Tarzan who is going through the jungle. He's probably 8 or 9 years old, and he's playing hide and seek. And you don't know who he's playing hide and seek with. And it ends up being that he's playing hide and go seek with a chimpanzee, and he gets caught. And all of a sudden, you see it's Milo is the chimp's name, and he's wearing the green that chimpanzees wear in the Planet of the Apes. So you're seeing, whoa, this is kind of interesting. So Tarzan has already been found by these people, or these apes. And he's like, you know, Tarzan's like, how'd you find me? And he goes, oh, come on, your bare skin? I see that anywhere. It reflects in the sun. There was nowhere to hide. So the two of them are running around. They're playing, having a good old time. And they're calling each other brother. And then all of a sudden, they get caught up in a stampede because there are wild animals in the jungles of Africa. But Brian, are there triceratops in Africa?
I mean, not currently.
1901, apparently there were, because a group of triceratops come flying through, and they are huge. They catch Milo, they catch Tarzan, and they catch them where they sort of have the horns, and they have that plate right about back behind their neck.
Uh-huh.
And the two of them get caught on different ones. So they're kind of it's like being stuck on a windshield. They can't move. The centrifugal force is pushing them back, and Tarzan jumps on, gets on one of them, cuts Milo loose. And then as something lights up, this big thing lights up on the ground, and Tarzan grabs Milo, and they come flipping out off of it. And then they look up and they see that this light hole swallowed up the triceratops, and they start laughing about it. Now we go back, we go somewhere else in the jungle, and you see that there is this gorilla who is dead and picked apart on the ground. And you've got four hunters, and one of them saying, you know, gee, sorry, Dr. Clayton, we didn't get here quick enough. The other guy says, well, I think these guys don't quite realize the meaning of having a trophy, because he can't do anything with this because he wants to mount the whole thing, but the legs are missing, an arm is missing. And they're saying, people are grabbing eight parts and selling them on the black market. But you see that it is not one of the people is the future Lord Greystoke. And you know that is Tarzan, or Tarzan's father. And as they look up, or they start walking away, you see these kind of demon-looking monsters in the trees looking down. And they're the ones that picked apart this dead ape. So meanwhile, we go back and you have Milo and Tarzan. They're young. They come walking back into the ape village. And this large gorilla comes out and starts yelling at him because he's a teacher. And he's like, hey, you guys weren't at school. You guys want to go run around and do all that. That's fine, but you're going to be punished. And as he is getting ready to strike Tarzan, Zira comes walking out. And the interesting thing is now you're trying to figure out what's going on. And if you know Planet of the Apes history, Cornelius and Zira came to Earth. She was pregnant. She had baby Milo. And then they hid Milo with the circus so he could get away. Well, in this reality so far, they had Milo, but he didn't die, or he didn't get taken away. And so Zira takes the two kids in and they're talking about stuff. And Tarzan goes, well, we're sorry, but you know, we were jumping on Triceratops and all of a sudden that hole in the sky opened up. And Zira goes, what'd you say? A hole in the what? And he goes, hole in the sky. So now Zira, Cornelius, Tarzan, and Milo were all sitting there, and Milo was saying, yeah, it was this part of the woods right here. The dinosaur is what he's calling it, dinosaur. And he says, yeah, you know, it was weird because all of a sudden this dinosaur, a hole opened up, and then Cornelius is looking through a book going, yeah, these things were extinct millions of years ago. This is not cool. They shouldn't be here. And I don't know what's going on. He goes, so you know what? You guys better go do your homework. So they go take off to do their homework. And now you go into the story of what had happened with how these guys, how Zira and Cornelius ended up here. And what happened was they resurrected the ship from the Forbidden Zone that Taylor landed in. They went into space. They went back in time as the Earth blew up because of the Great Earth or the Ape-Human War. They landed back on Earth, but instead of landing on the beach of California, they ended up landing in the jungle. And while they were there in the jungle, they just kind of blended in. They built their home. They built their society. And this is where they are right now. And now they're thinking, wait a minute, something's not good because there's a hole opening up. And if dinosaurs are coming in, maybe something else is coming in. So they're saying, you know, we tried desperately to be lost among the apes, and we don't know if that's going to happen. And then you see that what probably happened was the Tarzan story, which we're going to see in the second issue, what happens to him and how he gets caught up. But meanwhile, we go back to these hunters that are hunting down apes, and they shoot a gorilla, this Lord Greystoke. And as he shoots the gorilla goes, you know what? Just shoot and kill me then. And Lord Greystoke is going, oh my gosh, the ape spoke. I think he spoke a language. And then the other profiteers are there saying, oh, you know what? Maybe these apes have some value after all. You go back to Cornelius and Milo and Tarzan, and they're running around, jumping around, and they come across a gorilla in a trap. And then they go up, they see what's going on, and before they go to get him out of it, that's when the hunters see them. This crazy thing starts to happen, and when the one guy is going to go shoot, it's Lord Greystoke, is going to go shoot and run away. And as he does, Tarzan tackles him. And as he's looking, he's realizing this is the first time he's ever seen a human before. He's seeing them. He's seeing what's going on. But before anything happens, he gets smacked in the back of the head with a rifle. And then he is caught by the hunters. All sorts of craziness happens there. And then you go to now, where you see Tarzan as an adult saving the savage humans that are running around all over the place. But then he gets caught by the General Ursus. And that is where this ends. So what you get in this is you get the origin of how we get them there. We get the apes there, not the origin of Tarzan. We get a little bit of a mix of the Greystoke legend. And then we see that Tarzan is now defending humans in the wild of Africa with the apes that are running around with machine guns. Amazing, amazing story, an amazing book. The second issue came out, I was just as nutty crazy about that one. I think that they definitely have got a great solid thing here. And the art by Fernando Daguinho is amazing. And that's something that if you're doing a Tarzan book, you might be able to get away with art not as great. But to me, if you're doing a Planet of the Apes book, the art has to be perfect. And I'll show you the cover, Brian.
Very nice.
It is just spot on. I mean, it's gorgeous. All the art, every panel is amazing in here. So if you didn't get it and you like either one of the franchises, you got to check it out.
Well, I have two Tarzan questions, and I'll save one for when you do your Out of the Long Box. But my question for this one is, what if you're not like that familiar with either franchise? Is this a book that you can pick up? Is it accessible to new readers of either of those
characters? Oh, I think so, because they do a great one-page synopsis of how the apes got there.
Okay.
Which I thought was really cool. So I think that, you know, all you need to know is apes are talking and walking around, and Tarzan is a guy that was abandoned in the jungle, and now he thinks he's an ape.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. Well, I guess it is easy to follow that.
Yes.
All right. So my last book of the day is going to be an event that I have been waiting for. If you listened to our Creator Spotlight special last week, then you heard my interview with Dan Slott at Terrificon, where we talked a bit about the Dead No More clone conspiracy event that was coming up and how excited I was for it. Well, it is here now. Actually, we have two issues out now, but I'm going to talk about the first one today, written by Dan Slott, pencils by Jim Chung, inks by John Dell. Justin Ponsor is the colorist. Our buddy Joe Caramagna does the letters here. Gabrielle Delato is the cover artist, and there's a million variant covers off of this as well. Nick Lowe is the editor of this one. And anytime you mention clones and Spider-Man,
yep,
you have one of two reactions. Either people love it or they hate it. And it seems like there's a lot more people that didn't like the Clone Saga than did, but I was actually a fan of the Clone Saga.
Wow.
So I guess I'm in the minority there. But clearly Dan Slott knew what he was doing when he decided to make this event about clones, you know, him and the rest of Marvel over there. So, but we start off with something that has happened in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man, and that is the death of J. Jameson Sr. He is Jonah's father, and he was someone who was very ill. And Peter had a chance to greenlight a technology that would have potentially saved him. And he hesitated, and now Jay is dead. And what it was is there's a company called New You Technologies. And they are able to supposedly grow new organs and a new body for people who are ill that don't have any of the genetic problems that the previous version did. So if you have a, if you have some sort of hereditary condition, they can grow you new organs or a new body that doesn't have that condition anymore. And it's not cloning. It's literally you that they're making. That's what they're sort of calling it. And so they had offered to save him. Peter had had a situation at one of the Parker Industries sites where an employee was hurt and he allowed the technology to be used on one of his employees in order to see how it worked. And it was basically this guy was going to die if they didn't do it. However, when this guy came out of surgery, even though he was okay, when Peter went to see him, his spider sense started going crazy. So he felt like there's something going on with this technology. I don't understand what it is yet. I don't want to say that it's okay to use it with Jay because that's Aunt May's husband now and that's Jonah's dad. And I don't want to put my, you know, money and my name behind something that could kill him, could make him worse. And so he ended up dying. And so now Peter's got to deal with the guilt of maybe I should have just let them do that. Of course, Jonah has a new reason to not be happy with Peter. Aunt May is devastated. This is yet another love that she's lost. And the book begins with Peter thinking about all the people that he's lost. You know, Gwen, Captain Stacy, all of the people in his life, Jean DeWolf, you know, who they've lost over the years. And so he's thinking about that. And he's talking to Anna Maria, who, as I said in the interview with Dan, is like my favorite new character of the last 5 years in Spider-Man. I absolutely love her. So everybody kind of leaves after the funeral, and he's kind of hanging out. And Anna Maria says, you know, it's okay, they're all gone now. I figured you'd need somebody to talk to, especially if this is some sort of a Spider-Man thing, because she knows that he's Spider-Man. And he kind of tells her the whole story about that I just said, about basically how I hesitated because this technology was used on an employee of mine and there's something wrong that I don't know what it is yet. And she basically says, you know what? I'll help you figure out what's going on with this if you want. And she says, you should go see this guy, this Jerry guy that had the operation and see what it is that's setting your spider sense off. So they go to Oklahoma and they track down this guy, Jerry, and they go to his house and his wife answers the door. And she's like, oh, Mr. Parker, I wasn't expecting you. And he's like, hey, you know, I just wanted to drop by and see how you guys are all doing. You know, is your son around? And how's Jerry? How's he holding up? And she says, he can't see anyone right now. He's not feeling well. And Anna Maria kind of knows that she's bluffing and says, well, if he's not feeling well, we should probably get an ambulance here right now because he just recently had surgery. And she's like, all right, I'll let you guys in. So they get inside and they sit down and she says, look, they told me I couldn't tell anybody anything about this. And they're like, what are you talking about? These new you people, they came in and they said they would help Jerry, but I couldn't tell anybody what was going on, and they took him and all this kind of stuff. And she goes on to explain that after his surgery, he was given this prescription of pills that he was supposed to take one of them a day. They decided to go camping for a few days, and he forgot his medication at home, and they thought it would be no big deal. But she has a video of them on the camping trip, and he starts not feeling well, and he starts breaking out in the sweats, and all of a sudden something starts to happen to him. And Peter's watching this video, and he's saying, I know what this is. This is cellular degeneration. This is what happens with clones. I know what's going on here. This has got to be a clone situation. And so he says to the wife, I'm going to find your husband. I'm going to bring him home safe. I promise. And she's like, oh, thank you so much. And they get in the car, and Anna Maria's like, that was the dumbest thing you've ever said. You have no guarantee that you can save this guy. You don't even know if he's still alive, and you're going to guarantee that you're going to bring him home safely. So Anna Maria goes to Horizon Labs with this medication to try to figure out what exactly it's made out of. Peter dons his Spider-Man costume and goes to New U headquarters in San Francisco because he's going to break in and find out if what he suspects is true. And it doesn't take him long to break into this place to figure out that there are some back-to-tank looking things in here. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that look like they might be bodies being grown in here. And he goes up to one tank, and it's kind of like out of a horror movie. He goes up and he says, he finds this tank where there's literally just like a system of veins and a set of eyeballs nice. That are floating in this tank. And he recognizes this dude's eyes from the last time he talked to him. And he's like, he can't possibly be. And the eyes look at him. And he's like, holy crap, he's still alive. He turns around and who's standing behind him? Dr. Miles Warren, otherwise known as the Jackal.
Mm.
Except he's in his human form. And he's like, I knew it. I knew you, son of a gun. I knew this was a clone thing. You know, you're not getting away from me this time. Well, he starts to chase Warren, and all of a sudden, the Rhino and the new Electro, who is now a woman, come breaking in and chasing after Spider-Man. And apparently, they're working security for New U now. And so they get in a big knockdown, drag-out fight. Spidey is able to use the fact that this Electro is new and hasn't figured out all the ways that Spider-Man has used over the years to stop him. And he's able to use the old water on electricity trick and short-circuit Electro. And he manages to evade the Rhino as well. And he ends up getting into another area of the building. And he's trying to think about what he's going to do next. And he turns the corner and he runs directly into Gwen Stacy.
Huh.
And she's like, hey, Spidey, long time no see. And he's like, holy crap, I know she's got to be a clone because I'm dealing with the Jackal, but for whatever reason, she's not setting off my spider sense like the other ones did. Could this actually be the real Gwen Stacy? And as he's thinking about that, he gets smacked in the face, and you turn around there, and it's Otto Octavius, who is back to his pudgy green and yellow costume Perfect. Form with his robotic octopus legs.
His big
and he
Roy
says,
Orbison glasses.
Yes, Peter, your greatest adversary has returned in triumph, and that's the way that the issue ends. So let me just say, that was freaking awesome. We've been seeing Otto's return in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man, but to see him in all of his glory, to me, was awesome. Because as I talked to Dan Slott about when we did the interview, I am so happy and impressed with how Otto Octavius has become basically almost bigger than the Green Goblin now in terms of Spider-Man's main adversary. This is a guy who actually took over Peter Parker's body and lived as him and lived as Spider-Man and beat him. And like that is kind of amazing. And I loved everything with Superior Spider-Man. So to see him come back is pretty awesome. And to see Gwen there, you knew she was going to show up at some point. So right out of the gate, you get both of those, and it ends on a great cliffhanger. You then get a backup story by Dan Slott, Ron Frenz, John Dell, Edgar Delgado, and Joe Caramagna that is about the night that Gwen Stacy died. And it's sort of a retelling of her, the night of her death from her perspective, like how, you know, she got captured and she fell off the bridge and all that kind of stuff, except she now wakes up in New U Technologies, and she walks out and the Jackal is sitting there, and he's basically explaining to her that she is waking up almost the moment after she died. So when he brings someone back, it's like literally like no time has passed. And she, of course, thinks it's a trick. And he's talking to her about how she's not a prisoner here and all this kind of stuff. But if she wants to continue to live, she has to take this one pill every day. And he said, you know, you can make your own decision, but I want you to see something before you make it. And he takes her into the next room, and her father is alive and well and standing right there. And so when she sees him, she decides to take the pill, and now the Jackal has her on his side. And so what's cool about this so far is that the people that are working with the Jackal are all people that Peter Parker cares about and he knows, and they are doing it willingly because they actually believe in whatever the Jackal is doing, or at least what he's told them at this point. The other thing is, you have not seen the face of the Jackal because he is wearing like an Anubis mask. My theory is that it could be Ben Reilly.
Mm.
That's my thought when he takes the mask off, is that it's going to be Ben Reilly. I don't know how they would write that, but that's kind of my going theory at this point. But awesome, awesome first issue of Clone Conspiracy. If you're a Spidey fan, this is definitely one you're going to want to read. Unfortunately, it's $5, Matthew. So what I'm going to do to make myself feel a little bit better about that is I am going to give away a free code right now for this book. And that code, if you go to marvel.com/redeem and enter this code first, you will get yourself a free copy of Clone Conspiracy number 1. And the code is IKTXZ2OKXJ08. If you enter that code first, you will get your copy of Dead No More Clone Conspiracy number 1. Highly, highly worth reading. And if you don't get the code for it, then I would still recommend you go and check it out if you are a Spidey fan.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So now we're going to take a trip to the long box.
I like going to the long box.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite segments. I've always loved this because it makes me go back and read an old comic, which I would be doing anyway. But I sort of get to kind of pick where I'm going to go with it. And I thought that this would be a perfect one considering we just did Tarzan and Planet of the Apes. I'm going to review Tarzan of the Apes number 207. Now, the reason I'm doing 207 is this was the first issue that DC put out. Up until that, it was Dell that did it. And my father had every single one of these.
Really?
I really wished I would have gone back and not destroyed them or kept his Tarzans. As a young kid, when I discovered his comic book collection, it was mostly Tarzan, all the old Dell stuff. King of the Yukon, maybe. And then you also had all these. It was just like all the classic, the Lone Ranger, all the Westerns. I was not big into Westerns until I discovered Jonah Hex. But Tarzan was a book that I remember had all the photo covers.
Uh-huh.
And I was like enthralled by that, but never really read them. And the book that I'm going to be reading right now, or reviewing 207, this was my dad's copy. Because as a kid, when I was a young kid, this came out in 1972. So he was buying these when they came out right off the shelf because he was such a Tarzan fan. And maybe 5, 6, 7 years later, when I became a Joe Kubert fan, I instantly got drawn to it because Joe Kubert did all the covers and the art for the series. And this was my first introduction to Tarzan, was just because of this book. So we start out, and it's also 52 big pages for 25 cents.
That's better than the $5 I just paid for that Spidey issue.
Yes, 25 cents. So April of 1972. And again, Joe Kubert does the story based on the Edgar Rice Burroughs novels. And the art in this book is fantastic as anything that Joe Kubert would do. So we have a party going through the jungle, and you have a young woman who is looking for her father. And as they're going through here, this guy is kind of thinking in his head like, wow, well, this lady's paying a lot of money, so she's the one who's kind of pushing us, because they keep saying, hey, why don't we take a break? She's like, nope, we're here to find my father. So as they start to go through, all of a sudden a panther comes running out. And when a guy goes to shoot the panther knocks the gun out of his hand. And all of a sudden Tarzan shows up. And when Tarzan shows up, he wrestles the Black Panther. And then he gets a knife, and then he kills it, and then starts pounding on his chest, doing the, oh, kind of thing. And then he leaves, which I always, as a little kid, was like, that is so awesome.
Uh-huh.
He did something, pounded his chest, went, oh,
and bolted out of there.
Yeah. Done.
Yep.
Because you're leaving everybody now going, what was that?
It's like George. You leave them wanting more.
Leave them wanting more. So the woman goes, who is that? And he goes, oh, I heard people talking about an ape man, but I never actually believed he existed. And then he goes, listen here, miss, let me tell you about this. So then he goes on and he begins to tell the origin of Tarzan of the Apes, which takes place in 1888 in Dover, England. There is a ship that is leaving the coast and it is going to be going to Africa. They don't exactly say where they're going to go, but as the boat is going, they're explaining, you know, well, this is what's going on. We're honeymooning over here and we're going to maybe settle in a British colony somewhere in Africa. And they were talking, the husband and wife are talking about the fact that they're not really crazy about the captain. They think that he is a little weird, a little scary. And the thing with ship sail way back then was if you didn't like your captain, you didn't have a couple days of it. You were on the seas for maybe month and a half at a time. And as the crew is working, the captain's going through and he trips a bucket of a guy who's swabbing the deck. And he goes, you slimy bilge rat, watch where you put that filthy pail. And then he punches the guy out. And then all of a sudden, the captain gets punched in the face. And he goes, yo, you scurvy dog, you want to help your mate? Well, guess what? I'm going to take care of you. And then Greystoke comes behind the captain, grabs him before he can shoot him. The guy shoots uselessly into the deck. And meanwhile, as all this is going on, it is now a mutiny. And the crew is starting to go nuts. Crew's starting to go crazy. And the guy whose life he saved is named Black Michael. And as the Greystokes go below and go to bed, somebody comes down and says, folks, just stay down here. There's a lot of trouble going on. Don't come down here. And it's funny because every time you think of like the typical sailor wear of what a sailor would wear, and I don't even know if they did, maybe this is very accurate, but you know, late 1800s sailors apparently all wore red and white stripes and jeans.
It just seems to me like a mutiny broke out on every ship back then. Like I would never want to go on a ship.
No.
Because I'd just be afraid mutiny is going to break out.
Yeah, and you have to get mutiny insurance before you go because it's going to happen. So all of a sudden, the captain and a couple of his loyalists on his crew are taking on the rest of the crew. There's a big fight. They're screaming, yelling, and hollering. And then all of a sudden, the Greystokes end up on the bridge, on the deck. And then this guy goes, oh, here's two more for the fishes. Hee, hee, hee. And then the guy whose life they saved shoots him and says, you guys are safe because you saved Black Michael. And everybody leaves him alone. So then they get to a side of Africa and they say, hey, you know what? I can't really save you from the rest of the crew all the time. Something may happen. So I'm going to let you guys out here. I'm going to give you a boat. We'll give you provisions. You get all your belongings and then you can just live here. And then we're going to go somewhere and I'll tell somebody that you're here to come get you. So they're thinking, all right, that's probably the safest bet.
Seems like a reasonable plan.
Yep. So then they build a treehouse. You see them building the treehouse. Animals are all over the place. The woman becomes pregnant. And I remember as a kid being very interested and fascinated by this next chain of events where the guy was going to get attacked by this big gorilla. And as they are going at it, a woman shoots. The woman shoots the gorilla. The gorilla turns around and falls dead on her. Okay? He falls dead. She's laying underneath. And then she wakes up at night and says, oh, gosh, it was so crazy. I'm so glad to be home again. Now, apparently, when she shot the gorilla and the dead gorilla landed on her, it made her crazy because she thought she was in England for the rest of the time she was here. I used to be thinking, all right, what happened? As a five, six-year-old, I'm like,
sure.
Why did this woman all of a sudden go crazy because a gorilla fell on her? I mean, I didn't. My mother was also getting her license working in a very well-known mental institution in this area, Belchertown, which was a huge state hospital. So I was fascinated by this going, oh my gosh, if a gorilla falls on you, you will go crazy.
Because they didn't have concussions back in that time.
No, it was a comic book. So this woman the entire time was thinking she was living in England.
Sure.
Had the baby, but she never left the house, never left the cabin. She had the baby, and then all of a sudden some angry gorillas show up one day and she dies. But all the angry gorillas show up.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's her whole story?
Yeah, she does.
She is a gorilla fall on her.
Yep.
She clearly has a head injury.
Yep.
That goes untreated.
Yep.
Has a child.
Yep.
And then dies in a cabin treehouse in the woods.
Yeah, she just falls asleep one day. Then one year to the day.
Yeah, because she's got an untreated head wound.
Then one year to the day after the birth of their son, Lady Alice quietly passes away.
I mean, one year, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time for a head wound. And she still looked great all the way up until. There were no visible signs that there was trauma.
Well, except the dent in the back of her head, for crying out loud.
Covered by her beautiful flowing hair. So all of a sudden she dies. He's very upset. And he's going, oh, Alice, Alice, what shall I do? Meanwhile, as he's saying that, these gorillas are like freaking out outside. They're going nuts. They're going crazy. Then the gorillas are all jumping and running through the trees. And there is a husband and wife, or a mother and father gorilla. And this is the other part that traumatized me as a little kid. They all of a sudden are swinging. The mother and father are like fighting over who's going to carry the baby gorilla through the trees. And I'll show you, Brian. Baby gorilla falls to its death.
That's pretty traumatic.
As a little kid, I remember seeing that panel going, like as I was reading it last night, going, oh. And then there is a scene where the baby gorilla is laying there dead. And the mother just picks it up and it's all limp. No, this was approved by the Comics Code Authority.
Wow. Okay.
So then they go in, they beat up and kill the father, and then they take little baby Graystroke. They take him away.
Because they lost their baby.
Yep. Okay. So she takes that one and then they bring it in there and the mother becomes very protective.
Did they decide on who's going to carry the child before
I'm pretty
they
much pretty sure the mother was
okay.
going to be taking.
All right. That's good.
You know what? I'm taking care of any child carrying right. needs right
Let's
at this
Let's decide
moment.
That before we start swinging away yeah. from now on.
So all the gorillas are there. You see young baby Tarzan hanging out with all the gorillas and learning their language and talking to them and becoming one with them. And then he ends up wandering through the jungle. He comes into the house that he was a baby in, sees all these books, sees all these pictures, and says, wow, these people look like me. And then when he walks out, there is a gorilla there who is very angry and does not like him. He's a huge bull gorilla, Bull Ghani. And then they have a fight. He kills him. He's exhausted. And then the mother gorilla gets him and brings him to the tree and then brings him back to life, makes him feel better. And then we go back to finding out that it is just the end of the story. And the woman's like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. There's no boy that could have been raised by an ape, especially a British lord. He's like, well, you saw it for yourself. That's him. And then you see this, they're walking away. They're being followed by these people. And it says, next month, book two of The Origin of Tarzan the Ape Man. And in here you get a thing called The Dum-Dum, which is a story of by Marv Wolfman. It is the story of Edgar Rice Burroughs, who was just a fantastic writer. If it wasn't John Carter, Warlord of Mars, or Tarzan, it was the land and the people that time forgot. And then you have a little story in here from the newspaper strips from 1931 called Tarzan's First Christmas. And then you have John Carter, Warlord of Mars, The Arrival. So you have a story in here based on that story. So amazing, amazing, crazy stuff. Just a blast from the past, and it was really fun, and I can't wait to go back and read the first five or six issues, because it was funny that every single one of them would say first DC issue, then the second one, second spine-smashing issue, then the
and
third.
And after like the 30th, they're like, okay, yeah. You guys get it.
Fourth book from DC.
Yeah,
we're done.
It's been
we're
here
done
for a while.
This. So amazing stuff.
What is your favorite ad from that book?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, let's go through some of these, because there was a couple in here. There was the Aurora Cavemen Are Coming model kits, some books about, one to startle you, read DC's best horror books. Where was the one in here that, the 7 foot monster for a dollar,
books on mesmerizing people,
Columbia Record and Tape Club,
oh.
14 hit records for $2.86.
That's awesome.
And I always go through these. I don't know if
people today don't even know what that is.
No, it is so sad.
I was in the Columbia Record Club.
I was in it.
Except it was cassettes when I did it.
I was in it most of my life.
But was it 14 for a penny?
Yeah, you had to tape the penny to your,
yeah,
to the thing.
I think it was 14 for a penny.
Yep.
And then they would just randomly send me stuff because I'd forget.
You're supposed to mail the card back.
I would always forget to mail the card back. And so I would just get a tape in the mail.
Yep.
And sometimes we would pay for it, and other times I would have to send it back. And,
yep.
Because some of them were terrible. But, yeah, I remember going through and picking my 14
yep.
out of the list, and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yep, and then you get them. And then, I did it probably 7 or 8 times as a kid.
Uh-huh.
You know, you would do different names.
Sure.
My dad was a superintendent of the building complex we lived in, so my friends and I would, hey, Dad, is Q17 vacant? Oh, yeah, it's still vacant. Oh, okay, great. Yep. Thank you.
Sure.
And then I used to clean the mail room. So that was one of my jobs as a kid. I used to clean out the mail room. And then they had like the mail that would have to go back.
Uh-huh.
So we used to order albums, and my friends would do cassettes, and I would
So there's probably a whole host of former tenants who have been hounded by
Columbia. Let's just say the Columbia Record Club no longer exists, probably because of me and my friends. So I see these ads, and whatever it is, if I owned 14 albums that were in this ad, then I'm the greatest guy in the entire world.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you ever do stuff like that.
The greatest guy in the entire world. I don't think I ever elevated myself to that status.
Well,
but,
I had 14 albums in here, so I became the greatest guy.
Okay.
So, yeah, the Columbia House one, but yeah, you look at these ads. The Christmas tree or the Christmas card club going to Springfield, Massachusetts. 01101. Oh, that's just beautiful stuff.
Yeah. Good times. Good times.
Make
well,
money,
there you
get
go.
Prizes. Fabulous seeds.
Oh, the question I wanted to ask you is, as someone who has never been into Tarzan.
Yes.
I've literally never been into the stories, the movies, nothing.
Yeah.
What would you suggest that I read Tarzan has never clicked with me as like, oh, that's so cool. Like the closest I came to liking Tarzan was Jungle King, the video game. Like that's the closest.
I think if I was you, I might start with the old 70s cartoon, the Tarzan cartoon.
Okay.
That came out, that used to be part of the Tarzan Batman Hour.
And so perhaps maybe we should do a Saturday morning special on the old Tarzan cartoon.
I'm going to have to dig those out. And I believe DC did a showcase
of the Tarzan stories.
Of the first 15 or 20 of them.
All right. Okay.
So that would be recommended reading.
Well, there you go. That's your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week. And we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.